This week's Seder, we have the mitzvah of Kan Shippur. You chance upon a bird's nest with eggs or with young chicks and the mother. So if you want the eggs and the chicks, or even according to some, even if you don't want them, there's a mitzvah to take the chicks and the eggs and send away the mother. So the Gemara says in Brachas, Ha'omer al kan tzipor yagiu rachamecho m'shaskinosa. Somebody who says that just like Ribono Shel Olam, you had mercy on the birds and told to send away the mother bird, so too have mercy on us. Somebody who says that, you tell him to keep quiet. It's not a proper thing to say. Because the Gemara says two reasons. One is she'ose kina b'maisa b'reishis, because you're implying that God had mercy special on birds, but not on other creatures, and you're making jealousy amongst various creations. And the main reason the Gemara says is she'ose mitzvosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu rachamim ve'eino melech zeros. Who said that the reason that God said this mitzvah is because of mercy? Maybe it has nothing to do with mercy. It's a decree from heaven. You don't know the reason for the mitzvah. I don't know. If God had mercy, don't take the eggs, don't take the mother, just leave it alone. Right? So you can't say that this is because of mercy. Who told you that God gave this mitzvah? It doesn't say in the Torah the reason is mercy. So it would seem from here that we don't know the reasons for mitzvahs, and therefore you can't say that the reason that God gave this mitzvah is for the sake of mercy. Rabbi Kiva Eger, on that Gemara in Brachas, brings down a medrash in this week's Seder. And obviously, he brings it down because it's a question. Seems to be a contradiction. The medrash says like this. Just like God had mercy on birds, and he said to send away the mother bird and take the eggs, so too God had mercy on animals. And he told us that we shouldn't slaughter a young animal before it was with its mother for 7 days. Only on the eighth day can you slaughter it. And just like God had mercy on the birds and the animals, he has mercy on human beings and says that bris milah shouldn't be done before the eighth day. This medrash seems to contradict exactly what Chazal said. You're not allowed to say. They said that the reason that God commanded the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein is because of mercy. And the Gemara says, if somebody who says that, you're mishaskino, so you make him keep quiet. Not allowed to say that. So if you're not allowed to say it, why did Chazal say it? Same Chazal who said you're not allowed to say it, said it. Tell you another Gemara and a question, and then we'll answer all of it and understand what exactly is going on here. Gemara says in Sanhedrin, why didn't the Ribono Shel Olam reveal the tamei ha-mitzvah, the reasons for mitzvahs? Why, by every mitzvah, didn't it say, and this is the idea behind it, just like the Sefer HaChinuch, has Sefer tamei ha-mitzvahs in his Sefer ha-mitzvahs, the Sefer HaChinuch, and every mitzvah he says, mishorashi ha-mitzvah, from the roots of the mitzvah are this and this reason, this and this idea. Why did the Torah do that? So the Gemara says, because two mitzvahs, God revealed the reason, and one of the greatest people in the world made a mistake and transgressed those mitzvahs because of the mistake. And who was that? Shlomo HaMelech. Torah said that a king is not allowed to have too many wives, so they shouldn't deflect his heart. And he shouldn't have too many horses, that he shouldn't bring the people back to Egypt. So Shlomo HaMelech said, Ani arbe velo oshiv, Ani arbe velo oshiv. I'll have more wives. He had 1,000 wives. And he said, it's not going to affect me. I'm beyond that. Torah said, the reason you can't do it is because it'll affect your heart and deflect your heart. It's not going to happen to me. I'm smarter than that. And Shlomo HaMelech said, I'll have more horses, and I'm not going to bring the people back to Egypt. And he did. He made a treaty with him. He married the daughter of Paro for that treaty because of the horses. So because two mitzvahs, the Torah said the reason, and because of that, Shlomo HaMelech made a mistake, the Torah doesn't say the reasons for mitzvahs. There's another medrash that says that Shlomo HaMelech said, I thought I was smart. I thought I understood the Torah. Amarti Echkema. I thought I understood God's intentions. And the Hirachokam, I saw in the end, it was far beyond me. Because I thought I understood the Torah, and I see I didn't understand. Two questions. And then there's another medrash that says that the time that Shlomo HaMelech went and married more women than he was allowed, and got more horses than he was allowed, the yud from the word lo yarda came before God and said, Shlomo HaMelech is negating me. So God said, 1,000 like Shlomo will be negated, and one point from that yud won't ever be abrogated. So don't worry. So every time somebody doesn't have Eira, the letters come before God and say it's abrogating them. What does that mean? Lo yarda lo noshim. Why the yud? Why not the lamed? From the lamed. Lo la yarda. Why the yud from yarda? Why specifically that letter? In addition, the medrash I just told you before doesn't seem to be accurate. If I were to ask you, where was Shlomo HaMelech's mistake? In the Torah or in Shlomo HaMelech? The answer, of course, is in Shlomo HaMelech. The Torah says clearly, don't have too many wives because they'll deflect your heart. That's not a question. That's the reason. Shlomo HaMelech thought he was beyond that, that it wouldn't affect him. He made a mistake in appraising his strength. But he didn't make a mistake in the Torah. The Torah he learned very nicely. You're not allowed to do it because it'll deflect your heart. His mistake was in himself, not in the Torah. So why does the Medrash say, I thought I understood the Torah, and I see that it was beyond me? You understood the Torah. He didn't understand you. In order to understand all of this, you have to understand there is a difference between Tamei HaMitzvos and Sibos HaMitzvos. We don't speak about reasons for mitzvahs. We don't know the reason for mitzvahs. There may be a million reasons, and some of them beyond our comprehension, they're in God's mind. God is the one who made these decrees. They are a product of God's mind, and therefore they're way beyond anything that we could fathom. Similar to the following. Somebody were to ask you the reason why we eat certain foods. What is the reason? The answer is, the reason we eat is because we need to have nutrition. If we don't, we'll die. And there are certain foods that are nutritious, and that's why we eat those foods. Okay. Why those foods are nutritious and not something else, why we, our bodies, can integrate those specific things, proteins, carbohydrates, or whatever, and not other kinds of things, why we don't eat rocks, we'll gain weight a lot faster. Right. So, why don't we eat rocks? Because they don't have the things that are nutritious. And why are these things specifically nutritious and other things not? We can describe scientifically how it works, what it is, but we can't understand why. Why it couldn't be differently? Why couldn't God create us that we have gasoline motors instead of stomachs? And that we eat petroleum and that's how we survive? Instead of the things that create nutrition and digestion or whatever. Why it has to be like that? Could have been differently. So we don't know why, but we can describe what, but not why. Once we're eating, though, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to enjoy it. He wants us to have a taste, color, aroma in the food, so we also enjoy it. It's palatable to us. He could have made that what's nutritious is that we hook ourselves up to a tree and get it intravenously. But he didn't. He gave us taste, and he gave us smell, and he gave us a nice coloring to the food, and it's palatable to eat. Is that the reason we eat because it tastes good? No. It's an extra added benefit to make it palatable to us. The reason we eat is because we need to eat to live. Why do we eat these things specifically? We can't explain that. How it works, maybe we can explain. But why it has to be like that, there's no answer to that why. Similarly, mitzvahs are kihem chayenu va'orech yomenu. That is spiritual nourishment. Why these things are spiritually nourishing and other things not, just as much as we can't understand it when it comes to physical food, can't understand it by spiritual food either. Why dopka little black boxes that I put on my head and my arm and that may be purple boxes that I put on my knee, why this is nourishing to my soul and this isn't, I don't know why. As much as I don't know why these things are nourishing to my body and these things not. Why it couldn't be different. That's God made the world. He created us. These things have an effect and these things don't. And that's the way the world is, physically and spiritually. But the same Ribbono Shel Olam who gave us a good taste and aroma and coloring in the foods that should be palatable to us, also gave us ta'ame ha-mitzvah, tastes in the mitzvah. Those aren't the reasons for the mitzvah. They're tastes. They're things that we can appreciate also about the mitzvah. They teach us things. They guide us. They are intellectually satisfying, emotionally satisfying, but it's no more than a taste. What's the difference? You can have something with an artificial taste. Okay, take cardboard and cover it with an artificial taste. And you can eat that cardboard. You'll die of malnutrition within a certain amount of time with a good taste in your mouth. We don't eat things because they taste good. That's an extra added perk. It's not the reason why we do it. And there, and you also can eat stale bread that has no taste, no aroma, doesn't even look nice, right? It's green with mold. But if you're starving, right, and you have nothing else to eat, people ate that and survived because it has the nutrients. Even though it's not palatable and it's not attractive and it's not doesn't have a good aroma, whatever. People ate worse than that in concentration camps or whatever to survive. So the time, the taste can be missing completely and you still have to eat. And you can have the taste and not have the essence of the thing and it's not going to help you. The taste is an extra added perk. It's not the reason for eating. Same thing with mitzvahs. The taste in the mitzvah is not the reason for the mitzvah. The difference is, if the reason doesn't apply, then the mitzvah doesn't apply. But if the taste isn't there, the mitzvah still applies. Just as much as the reason to eat that food still applies, either if it tastes good or doesn't taste good. Shlomo HaMelech made a mistake. Not in Shlomo HaMelech, in the Torah. And he thought when the Torah said that you shouldn't have too many wives because they will deflect your heart, that that was the reason for the mitzvah. That's why God gave it. That's the reason in God's mind, because God said, I don't want the king's heart to be deflected, therefore you shouldn't have more than one wife. No, that wasn't the reason. That's a taste in the mitzvah that can appeal to us. The reason for the mitzvah is in God's mind. Could be a million other things beyond our comprehension. But God gave us a taste in the mitzvah that we could also appreciate. That the king, when he doesn't take too many wives, will appreciate also a taste that makes it palatable to him that he could understand. Shlomo HaMelech understood that to be the reason for the mitzvah. And therefore, if the reason doesn't apply, then the mitzvah doesn't apply. That's not true, because it's not the reason. It's only a taste. So his mistake was not in Shlomo HaMelech. His mistake was in when the Torah said, don't do it. Right? It meant, no matter what you think, and you think you're beyond it or whatever, you may be beyond the taste, but you're not beyond the reason why I gave the mitzvah. That reason is beyond your comprehension. That's a mistake he made. Memela, a chazan who gets up and says, Ribbono Shel Olam, I know why you gave this mitzvah, because you are merciful. And you, in your mercy, commanded us to send away the mother bird as an act of mercy. That is totally wrong. Who are you to tell why God gave that mitzvah? And to tell God, and therefore, since you are merciful and you exhibited your mercy in this way, have mercy on us. That's completely trying to second guess God's intention in the mitzvah, and therefore, how God is going to function. What the rabbi said in the Medrash is what we can learn from that mitzvah. Now, God may have had a million reasons why he made that mitzvah that are beyond our comprehension. But what can we learn from it? We can learn mercy. You can learn mercy. It's a taste. But it's not the reason. Again, the difference is, what if the reason doesn't apply, then the mitzvah doesn't apply. But if the taste doesn't apply, then the mitzvah still applies. If you think you're learning reasons, then you have the cause of the mitzvah. In Hebrew, the word shiva comes from the word lehisoveh, to turn. It's the cause and effect. So this causes the mitzvah. If it causes the mitzvah, if it's not there, there's no cause. But if it doesn't cause the mitzvah, the causes of the mitzvah are beyond our comprehension. But it's a taste in the mitzvah, then it's a very nice taste. If it's not there, it has no bearing on whether you have to do the mitzvah or not. You still have to do it, even if it doesn't taste good, even if it doesn't have any taste, even if the taste doesn't apply. Tamei ha-mitzvah are merely tastes. They're not reasons. They're not causes. So somebody who says, God, I know why you gave the mitzvah. You are merciful, and therefore you should have mercy. So he's speaking from God's point, why he made that mitzvah. That's called a reason. That's wrong. Person says, when we learn this mitzvah, we can learn mercy from it. Fine, you can learn mercy from it. That doesn't imply that you know the reason why God gave it. But one of the tastes, one of the things that's palatable to us when we do a mitzvah is that it teaches us mercy. That's possible. It's a nice taste in the mitzvah. That doesn't mean that's the reason why God gave it. That's the basic idea. So whenever we speak about tamei mitzvah, you have to realize that we're not talking about reasons for mitzvahs, we're talking about tastes in mitzvahs. Yes?
The
Rabbanan, yes, but in a little bit different way. Right? The Rabbanan, what they do is mostly comprehensible. Yeah? But many times the Rabbanan didn't say all the reasons they had because they knew that people would start saying, well, I don't really think that's a good reason or whatever. So they said sometimes some reasons or didn't say any reasons. And therefore, if you think that the reason doesn't apply, the halacha still applies from the Rabbanan, because there may be other reasons they had that they didn't tell you. So you may negate one, and therefore maybe they wouldn't have made the gzeira had your reason the reason you thought didn't apply, but they still made it for other reasons which they didn't reveal. So it applies to a certain degree, but not exactly the same. Okay, and that's why the yud went before God. If it wouldn't be a command, it would just be good advice. God said, you know, I'm giving you good advice. I don't think it's a good idea to have too many wives because they could deflect your heart. Then some will be right. God is telling us good advice based on X, Y, and Z. But God made a command. This is a decree. Then he told us a reason, what looks like a reason, which only a taste. So if Shlomo HaMelech is saying, really the decree doesn't apply to me because the reason is not there, then he's destroying that yud. The yud is the command. It should have just said, im, yir benoshim, rav anoshim, it may deflect your heart. Right? It's just good advice. But it's not good advice. It's a command. If it's a command, then unless God says you're an exception, you're not an exception, even if you think you know the reason. And that's why this really has to do with next week's Seder, but next week I want to speak more about Rosh Hashanah, so we'll pick up a rhyme. It also implies something else. Where you think that you're going to benefit from doing the sin, and know it's a sin, know it's wrong, but the benefit will outweigh the detriment. That means that you understand what the benefits are, what the detriments are, and you can make that shikul of what outweighs what. That's also totally off base. Example, in the early 1900s in America, so the conservative movement began. Okay, unlike the reform movement that just gave up the Torah, they didn't believe in anything, basically. Okay. They didn't believe anything was divine, and they basically trampled the Torah completely. Conservative made it look like they want to conserve the Torah, right? They want to. They felt that orthodoxy was dying. Nobody's going to keep everything, and at least conserve what you can. Conservation is you don't use something too much, so you don't use it up. So they decide not to use the Torah too much, so they don't use it up. So they said like this, and some of them meant it really. Eventually, they said, look, if we don't allow people to drive on Shabbos to shul, they're not going to come to shul, because now people live in the suburbs and not within walking distance, and the shuls are going to be empty, and people aren't going to have that experience of coming to the shul, you know, hearing the rabbi's benediction or whatever that will change his life. So we're going to permit people to drive on Shabbos in order they should come to shul and be more religiously oriented. We're going to let people sit together with their family, husbands and wives, and even better with other people's wives, because that will give them incentive to come to shul. But if we put the women behind the machitza and the men sit with the men, they're not going to have an incentive to come to shul. So we're doing it, we are permitting these things that we know really are not proper, but we're doing it for a good reason. We're doing it to save Judaism. What's wrong with that? The Chassam Sofer says that in next week's Sefer, not Kisavo, there's one of the curses that is on the Jewish people that we had to accept in the general observance of the Torah. One of them, the last one, is cursed is the person who doesn't fulfill the Torah to do it. He says, it's redundant. What do you mean to do it? He says, well, the person says, I'm not going to fulfill the Torah, but I'm doing it to do it, to make the Torah better, to make people keep the Torah better, just like the conservatives say. You get a curse for that. Why? So there's a marshal from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that explains it very nicely, why this line of reasoning is flawed. He said there were two kings, King Reuven and King Shimon. And they got together one day, and King Reuven said to King Shimon, I'll bet you $1 million that if you send your prime minister to my land for a week, I can get him to undress publicly. King Shimon said, my prime minister may not be the smartest guy in the world, nor the most refined, but there is no way in the world he's going to undress publicly. So I accept the bet. So King Reuven said, you can tell your prime minister anything, send him to me for a week, just can't tell him about the bet. King Shimon calls in his prime minister, and he says, I'm sending you to King Reuven's land for a week. I just want you to promise me one thing. Under any circumstances, you will not undress publicly there. He says, that's all you want me to say? No problem, I really wasn't anticipating or considering it. You got it. That's all you want from me? Fine. Goes to King Reuven's land, and he's there for 2-3 days, and King Reuven calls him in. And he says, you know, I've been observing you, and you are one of the finest statesmen I've ever seen in my life. And it's amazing to me that a hunchback like you could be such a refined statesman. The guy says, hunchback? I'm not a hunchback. Of course you're a hunchback. And really, you don't have to be embarrassed. You don't have to be, what's it called? It's obvious you're a hunchback, but you still have gone beyond your physical handicap and become a really refined statesman. And I'm really, really impressed. I said, I'm not a hunchback. He says, you are a hunchback. So I'm so sure you're a hunchback, I'm willing to bet you $500,000 that you're a hunchback. That's just ridiculous. He says, I know I'm not a hunchback. There's no way I could lose this bet. He said, well, how are we going to decide this? There's only one way. I'm going to call in my entire court, and you're going to get undressed in front of them. If they say you're a hunchback, you give me $500,000. If they say you're not a hunchback, I'll give you $500,000. I said, this is ridiculous. I know for sure I'm not a hunchback. There's no way I could lose this bet. So he says, okay. Then he remembers, oh, hey, the king told me I'm not supposed to undress publicly. He said, but if he would have known that I could make $500,000, I'll give him a quarter, I'll keep a quarter, everybody will be happy. So he says, okay. They call in the whole court, he gets undressed, they look at him, they say, this guy's not a hunchback. He says, okay, King says, I guess I lose. Gives him $500,000. The guy runs back to his king, he says, look, before you hear what happened and get mad at me, listen, here's $250,000 for you, quarter for me. I didn't listen to you, and I got undressed publicly, but I made $250,000 for both of us. The king says, you idiot. You don't think I knew that you could make $500,000 if you got undressed publicly? You didn't make $500,000. If you give me the whole thing, you lost me $500,000. You saw the gain of the $500,000. You didn't see the loss of $1,000,000. So too, the Rabban Shalom says, oh yeah, you see the gain. There's so many more people in shul, and these people, what's it called, maybe they'll become frum, and their kids will become great. But you know what the loss of Chil Shabbos is? You know what the loss is of them driving on Shabbos? Do you have any idea what it does to the world, what kind of spiritual pollution, what kind of, what it does to the ozone layer and whatever, right, and beats down radiation and what it brings the world to destruction, Chil Shabbos? No, that you don't see. You just see what you perceive as gain, but you don't know about the $1,000,000 loss. That's why the thinking is flawed. Yeah, you're thinking you're going to go against what the Torah said for the sake of the Torah. You see the gain, but you don't know what the loss is from going against what the Torah said. You have no idea in heaven and on earth and the everlasting, universal, how much damage there is from the averus that are being done. So that's the idea. So sometimes people think they know the reason, they know the benefits, they know the detriments, and they can make these cheshbonos. You should realize that these cheshbonos only God can make. And therefore, since it's a command, you keep the command. You don't make these kind of cheshbonos to decide that you can second-guess God and do better than him, right? He didn't really know, because God didn't know that there could be more people in Shula. He wouldn't demand, you know, Shmir Shabbos. But the Maaseh, what can you do? So we know better than God, and we'll teach him a lesson and help him out, right? Because he didn't really know, which is just as foolish as the other kinds of things, that the Torah, when the Torah was given, right, these things were relevant. And God said, for instance, don't light fire on Shabbos. Why? Because when the Torah was given, you had to rub two sticks together or two stones, and it was a lot of work, and you're not a lot of work on Shabbos. This is work. But today, you light a match. You watch it called turn on the electricity. What kind of work is that? So that's what they say, right? When the Torah was given, yeah, God was right, it was work. Now it's not work. First of all, they don't know history. Because when the Torah was given, they weren't lighting fires by rubbing two sticks and stones together. They had tinder boxes, which were as easy to light work-wise as a match. So it's a distortion of history. But let's say it was true. People were lighting fires by rubbing two stones, and it was really a lot of work. So what do you say? God said you have to keep Shabbos and don't light fires on Shabbos forever. Because God didn't know that people were going to develop matches. One day God woke up and he looked, he said, wow, these people are something. I thought they're going to be lighting fires by knocking two stones together forever. But wow, these people really, I never thought of matches. That was really something great, right? They devised matches. If I would have known that, I never would have said that they couldn't light fire, you know, forever, because I would have known that they're going to make matches. I wouldn't have said forever. I just thought they're going to be knocking two stones together forever. That's the most infantile understanding of what God is that you could ever think of. So that's also flawed. You think that you understand God's mind, and you're limiting him to be a kindergarten child, right, who doesn't know as much as people. People know how to develop matches. God never even thought of that, right? But the people really, you know, they really surprised him, right? I never thought you could light fires without knocking two stones together. You guys are really something special. So the whole reasoning limits God's knowledge to our understanding, which is absurd. So this whole line of reasoning is not true. Another thing, Torah says, just to show you where the opposite, how a tam of the mitzvah could explain the mitzvah nicely, even though it's not the reason, but it makes it palatable for us. Torah says you're not allowed to wear shatnez, can't wear clothing that have wool and linen together. There's an exception. Gedilin tasalecha, if you have tzitzis. And you have a four-cornered bag made of linen. You have to put tzitzis on it. And when there was tcheles, the dyed tcheles has to be wool. So you're allowed, you have to put tzitzis on a linen garment from the Torah, even though you're making shatnez, wool and linen together. You can't make the tzitzis that are tcheles anything but wool. And you have a four-cornered garment of linen. So I might think the Torah said, okay, here, forget about the tzitzis because it's going to be shatnez. Or forget about the tcheles. Put on linen tzitzis. No, Torah says you can and you should put on wool tzitzis on a linen beged, even though you're not allowed to wear shatnez. Here is an exception. So the Medrash says that these two halachas, b'dibur echad nemru, they were said together. Not that they're contradictory. Not that the same God who said, I don't want you to wear shatnez, here said, okay, we'll make an exception. So it's contradictory things. No. If you understand the idea behind it, okay, they work perfectly together. And again, here we're not talking about the reason, but it's a nice taste. What's a nice taste? The Zohar says in the beginning of Bereishis that when Cain brought his sacrifice, right, to God, which was not accepted, because he didn't bring from the best. He brought inferior things. He was a farmer. What did he bring as a sacrifice? Flax. Linen. Right? He could have brought nice fruit, luscious fruit. He didn't. He brought something that was inferior. A bunch of flax as a sacrifice. So it wasn't accepted. Hevel, on the other hand, was a farmer. Was a shepherd, and he brought me bechoro solno v'cheldeyan. He brought from the choicest sheep and their fat, the fat sheep. He brought the best. What were the two sacrifices? Cain brought flax, and Hevel brought sheep, which is wool. Right away in the beginning of the world, wool and linen couldn't get together. Cain ended up killing Hevel. Why did they kill each other? Over covet. Who's going to get the covet of God accepting their sacrifice? Okay? And because of that covet that Cain missed, he killed Hevel. Okay? What exhibits the covet of a person, the honor of a person's clothing? The Gemara says that one of the ways of designating calling clothing is mechabda, mechabdusi, that which honors me. The clothing exhibits externally your honor. A policeman wears a police uniform, you know he's a policeman. You see his essence manifested externally. So a person dresses, the honor of the person is related and manifested through his clothing. Clothing is an honor. When it comes to honor, which is clothing, wool and linen couldn't get together. The linen killed the wool. And therefore, the Torah prohibited shatnez, an idea, it's not the reason again, an idea. Therefore, the Torah said, don't in clothing mix wool and linen. It arouses this whole animosity between Cain and Hevel. Okay. That really only applies, though, where the clothing is your honor. But let's say you're wearing clothing that's not to show your honor, but to honor God. The clothing itself is an honor to God, not an honor to you. The tzitzis that you wear is not your honor. It shows that you are a slave to God and you remember his mitzvahs. So by wearing this clothing, you're honoring God. So the whole idea of shatnez doesn't apply. It only applies where in your honor, you shouldn't mix wool and linen. But if it's clothing, and that's why there's another exception, big day kahuna. The clothing the kohanim, the Kohen Gadol, wore, also were shatnez. Because it's not for his honor. It's for the honor of God. So where clothing are not to exhibit your honor, the whole idea of shatnez doesn't apply. So therefore the Torah said it's okay. It's not that it's contradictory, but God said do contradictory things. If you understand the source of the isser of shatnez, this is not part of that source. These are clothing that you're not wearing for your honor. These are clothing that you're wearing for the honor of the Ribono Shel Olam or whatever. Therefore, the whole concept of shatnez doesn't apply. Again, it's not the reason. We wouldn't come to this if the Torah not said that tzitzis are exempt from shatnez. We wouldn't come to this on our own as the reason. Once the Torah said it, we can devise a palatable understanding that makes sense to us. That doesn't necessarily mean that's the only reason why God exempted it. There may be a million other reasons that are beyond our comprehension. But this is a nice taste that we can find palatable to make this mitzvah palatable to us, even though it's not necessarily the reason. Okay. Okay. Let's so short. Something nice from the Dublin Market. It says that an Ammoni Moavi can't convert and marry into the Jewish people. The males, the females can. That's why Rus was allowed to convert. Because lo kidmu eschem b'lechem v'mayim, they didn't come out and greet you with provisions. They should have had Akoras HaTov. They existed because of Avram Avinu. Because he saved Lot through his prayers. If he hadn't saved Lot, there wouldn't be an Ammon and Moab. Okay? So they owe their whole existence to us. To our progenitor, Avraham Avinu. And they had the chutzpah not to give us bread and water when we came out of Mitzrayim. To greet us, right? So that was one reason. It showed a certain lack of character, lack of hakaras hatov, which is the basis of believing in God, recognizing good in the world. And maybe next week we'll speak about that a little bit because it would be kurim. But in any case, and asher socher alecha is Bilam ben Beor. And they also hired Bilam ben Beor to curse you. So what's this? I mean, okay, not having Hakaras HaTov is one thing, but trying to destroy us, that should have been enough by itself. Why the two things together? So I saw the Dubna Magid says like this. He doesn't say it with all of this, but one of the principles of Musar, the worst Musar you can give somebody, Tochacha, the worst rebuke, is to show them that they are a self-contradiction. Right? In other words, lashed lava, a person is going to say, God's going to ask him, why didn't you learn Torah? The guy said, I didn't have time. I was just too busy. I was just overwhelmed with my parnasa, whatever. God's going to say, very interesting. But I see that you have time to go play tennis, time to play, what's it called, to talk lashon hara. I mean, where'd you get that time? So God's not going to say, well, you should have realized Torah is important or whatever. He's going to say, it's a very nice excuse, but it doesn't hold water because you contradict yourself. God's going to say, why don't you give tzedakah? I was poor, I didn't have money. God's not going to say, well, you should have realized that giving tzedakah is important, you should have sacrificed. He's going to say, okay, I accept that. You didn't have money, it's too hard for you. But on this and this date, you ate in this restaurant, here's the tip, here's the bill. Where the guy didn't have money to give tzedakah, go to eat in that restaurant. So you're a self-contradiction. Same thing over here. That's what Torah said. If you didn't come with bread and water, okay, maybe you're stingy. Maybe you don't have money to spend on these things. But you went and had money to go and hire Bilaam. He took a hefty amount to go curse the Jewish people. For that you do have money? To give them bread and water, not? The two things together already show that you are really, really despots. Right? You don't have any hakaras hatov, and you have the money to go and curse the Jewish people? At least you could give you an excuse. You didn't have the money to go and bring bread and water. A lot of people, big expense. So you were cheap, but you weren't cheap in cursing them. So it shows, obviously, that you have tremendously bad midos, right? You have a total lack of hakaras hatov, of gratitude. That kind of person can't join the Jewish people.